So I've been talking a lot about tariffs the last few weeks. We can't escape it, and we also can't escape the fact that we are, as Michiganders, intertwined with the automotive industry. Many of us have family, friends, or both that are massively dependent on the automotive industry succeeding. And how do the tariffs affect them? There was kind of a temporary carve-out discussion, but in the short to medium term, what does that mean? We thought we'd check in with Mitch Zajac. He is an automotive attorney with Butzel Long, and Mitch is an expert in this kind of thing, at least we hope, although there's a lot of question marks for everybody, including the experts. Hi, Mitch. Thanks for joining.
Glad to be here. Thanks for having me on the show.
Glad to have you, man. Listen, we've been talking so much about tariffs. I know you're digging harder into this than most of us who are kind of armchair quarterbacks. How does the automotive industry, at least in our neck of the woods, responding to the potential for price hikes kind of across the board? And what, if anything, are they doing to try and stem the tide of that with so much uncertainty?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. And it's really been, you know, the automotive industry being active since the onslaught of these additional tariffs, whether it's the steel and aluminum tariffs, the issues with stacking and the automotive auto parts tariffs, reciprocal tariffs. But, you know, the automotive industry, as we all know here in Detroit, it's a global industry. And so there's been a lot of different kinds of discussions, some of it cordial and negotiating and kind of inclusive of an understanding between suppliers and automotive manufacturers. But then also there's been disputes that have been starting to bubble up, and we're seeing frustration, of course, with whichever company in the contract is in a position to be carrying the brunt of the burden. But we've also seen a lot of working together. You know, there's been a lot of joint initiatives to go to Washington to explain and provide more detail about how these tariffs are affecting the automotive industry, how they're affecting the state of Michigan and those, as you were mentioning, that are connected in some way to the industry. And I think that work, kind of the collective work, has done a lot to kind of build an awareness of the issue to allow for better understanding, you know, in the administration of the effects of the tariffs. And I think that's why we've seen some, I'll call it pausing or stepping back to a degree on some of the tariffs, and with an understanding of the unintended consequence wasn't to overshoot, and we need to do a little bit better if we're working towards trying to achieve whatever the goal is, do it in a way that allows for industry to continue to operate.
Yeah. Mitch, listen, I don't want to put you on the spot, because this is one of those questions that is probably is vague enough to potential for the potential of confusion. But I continue to wonder, when you look at these window stickers, and I know you're on the legal side of this, not the mechanical side necessarily. You look at a window sticker of a car, and it says this, you know, is 73% made in the USA on a Ford, for example. Do we know at this stage what percentage of the parts and what percentage of the price that those parts are being outsourced from, for example, from a China or from somewhere overseas, that would impact the sticker price? I mean, if 80% of the car is already made here, it's just the 20%, and that 20% is relatively inexpensive componentry, it might not move pricing that much. Do we know any of that at this point?
No, you know, most of that information is, I'll call it the proprietary, you know, markups that exist within the OEMs. I don't know if you know this, but my background, I used to be an engineer and program manager at Stellantis. At the time, it was Chrysler and FCA. And so I do have a bit of insight into, you know, kind of the strategy with the sales work and how different incentives play into this. I think that there is, you know, always going to be more space to make adjustments the closer you get to the end product, which in this case obviously is the automobile. And I think that what we've seen in the case of this most recent executive order from earlier this week that deals with the import adjustment offset and the call it the 3.75 maximum rebate for auto manufacturers that assemble in the U.S., I think we see that there's an understanding that there is a portion at least of the vehicle that needs to be accounted for and addressed in order to try to compensate for the fact that this is an existing, you know, assembly operation in the U.S. and it does have an existing foreign supply chain to a degree. And so that's where that 3.75% rebate comes in, to try to address that portion of the vehicle that is otherwise from out of the country.
And just explain that Cliff Notes version for all of us. The 3.75 rebate is paid from whom to whom?
Yeah, so the way that it's written, and we're expecting more details on exact process and things, but it's written that the auto manufacturer will be able to apply for a rebate of up to 3.75% from essentially the U.S. Treasury based on an accounting of, I think it's a little complicated here, an accounting of the tariffs applied to up to 15% of their parts on the vehicle. And so that math is how you get to 3.75. 25% times 15% equals 3.75 multiplied by the MSRP, and there's your rebate.
But they would be paying the tariff that they're spending to the U.S. government anyway, and then potentially getting a rebate, which just works as an offset to keep the chain flowing. So, okay, so you know obviously far more about this than the average bear, even though, you know, you're saying there's things we haven't even figured out yet, and, you know, you're tangential to some of these conversations. But in the land of the blind, Mitch, the one-eyed man gets to be king, okay? So you're sitting around with all your buddies having beers, watching the game, and you're overhearing the conversation that goes something like that. Well, the hell with it. Why don't you just make all the parts here? You know, if Ford's got a problem or Stellantis has got a problem with that, just make that stuff here, stop buying it from overseas, and you're in the clear. You say what?
Yeah, I think it's complicated, and I have had that conversation over beers with friends because, you know, there was for many, many years kind of this globalization initiative that, you know, we want to, not for, you know, getting cheaper labor, but for ensuring that when natural disasters hit, that we're not, you know, confined to just one region, or perhaps the availability of minerals and key components. You know, we have there's things in other parts of the country or in other parts of the world that are not available in the country. So it's fine, that concept, in my view, to start to work towards re-domesticating manufacturing, but it's not something that can happen overnight. And so this concept of bringing either, you know, whether it's regionally to North America or to the United States, disagree or agree, but there still needs to be a runway for it. And so I think that what we're seeing is a recognition of, to a degree, that there needs to be some sort of runway, and we can't bombard everyone with 50% or 100% tariffs, you know, setting China aside. But I think that the concept of just bringing here is a fine one. It's just a matter of practically, new factories don't come up overnight. The workforce isn't trained overnight. There are going to be issues. You know, we came out of COVID and people wouldn't go to work at McDonald's for less than $20 an hour. So there's going to be, you know, wage inflation issues to be dealt with. So there's a lot of complicated issues that just don't happen.
So, Mitch, what I hear you saying, this is a great take. What I hear you saying in general, it's just not realistic to do something like that fast enough where there's not, you know, the financial damage done that might be irreparable, essentially. So, Mitch Zajac, again, automotive attorney with Butzel Long, we appreciate your feedback. There's far more to the story. 800-859-0957.